Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Folks, if you are looking to still get on that program of losing weight that you talked about in January, well, it is now the middle of May, and we've got a great guest that's going to help you get back on track. We're going to be speaking with Carly Pollock today, and her book is Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Life Fulfilled. So we're going to get into this. Sit back, take some notes, and then go out and get the book and get on your little program, because it will definitely help you. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But you know, I always ask the question, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, visit my website, MoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. Excuse me. According to the Center for Disease Control, approximately 91% of women are unhappy with their body and resort to dieting to achieve their ideal body shape, while more than 70% of women over the age of 20 are considered overweight or obese. Excuse me. This means that most of us don't know how to eat in a way that fosters a healthy relationship with food. Now, while this has done wonders for the diet and supplement industry, it's left an emerging generation of women feeling frustrated, bloated, and searching for something that will finally set them free from the prison of chronic yo-yo dieting. My guest tonight is Carly Pollock, and she is the author of Feed Your Soul and is the founder of Nutritional Wisdom, a thriving private practice down in Austin, Texas. She's a certified clinical nutritionist with a master's degree in holistic nutrition. Now, Carly has been awarded Best Nutritionist in Austin for 5 years running and has helped over 10,000 people achieve their health and happiness goals. And you can check her out at her website, and that's CarlyPollack.com, and that's CarlyPollack.com. Welcome, Carly.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, it's so great to have you with us. Now, you know, you're a relatively young lady, and you've been through a lot with, you know, ups and downs and weights. How did you get started on this process of creating a book and a program for people? I'm going to not just say women, but for people to become more consciously aware of what they're eating.
I would say it started with my own struggle way before I knew that I was ever going to do work in this way. But I really feel like the work that I do is not based on my master's degree and all of those diplomas I have hanging up, but it's really based on my own experience. Because when I teach people, especially women, how to not only make peace with their body, but demand more of themselves and get to that place where they really do feel like their physical appearance is a reflection of deep inner work, in order to have done that, I really had to learn how to do it for myself. So if I had to answer truthfully, I would say that the book and all of these things were born way before I even had an idea that they would come to fruition.
Okay. So how did you get to the point where you could understand that inner work is the most important component of weight loss? Because people think, well, you know, why do inner work? I don't have to do that. I just go on this diet or this eating plan, or the new word is lifestyle plan, and then, you know, everything will magically work out.
I had what felt like, I call it a diet-induced Groundhog Day, where you go on the umpteenth diet and you have a little bit of success, and then something changes and you lose motivation, you get distracted, food cravings, whatever the case may be, and then we fall off and we fall really, really hard. And then there's this cycle of gaining the weight back, hitting some sort of pain threshold, which is a threshold you hit where you no longer can tolerate what's going on. So whether that's your jeans don't fit, or you start to feel unwell, or your body starts to hurt, whatever, everybody has a different pain threshold. And then I would hit that pain threshold and I would go back on the diet. And there was an aha moment for me realizing, I'm sure it was a Monday, which was always my heaviest day because the weekend was always debaucherous. And then it was this Monday of waking up and going, you know what? I've been focusing on food and exercise in order to lose weight and be healthy because that's what my culture has taught me, and it's not working. And if the mind is the one driving the bus and driving me crazy, then I need to do some deeper work to understand what drives us to do what we do, because I know that knowledge alone is not going to cut it. I had a master's degree in nutrition. If anybody knew how to lose weight, it would have been me. And realizing in my own path that if I know what it takes to get to this place of peace with my body and I'm not doing it, then I need to teach people much more than how to eat more fruits and vegetables.
Well, we're going to get into fruits and vegetables in a little bit because it's interesting. It's dicey buying food and eating today. Now, in the intro, I mentioned that it means that most of us don't know how to eat in a way that fosters a healthy relationship with food. Is that really true, or is it that that's partially true and the other part is our food is so contaminated these days and modified that we're actually being poisoned and or the way that it's being modified encourages us to gain weight?
All of those things are true, everything that you just said, but the most important one is the first thing, which is we don't have a relationship with food that is healthy and is balanced. Of course, it matters that our food is contaminated if we're not buying clean, organic, local sources of food. But when you weigh the value of these things, overeating and binge eating and feeling stressed about our bodies. Eastern medicine believes that stress is the root cause of disease. There's all different kinds of stress, even the chemicals you're speaking of in the food, that is a type of stress. But us being obsessed with our bodies and the negative thoughts that we have all day long is the far greater stress than the pesticides sprayed on our vegetables. So it all matters. I would hate to say that it doesn't, but it's so overwhelming to think, okay, not only do I have to heal my relationship with food, but now I also have to learn and you know, budget for how to buy organic, and I have to stay away from sugar because it's so addictive that it makes me want to eat more. That's really overwhelming for people. And I say start with, you know, in AA, they always tell you, you know, tackle the biggest thing first. So I remember my best friend who was in AA for many years, I would go to these open meetings with her to support her, and all of these people would be smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and eating donuts. And I took a look one day and said, oh, these people are still addicts. They're addicted to caffeine and sugar and nicotine. And I said that to her, and she said, well, we are taught to tackle the biggest thing first, which is we will die if we don't manage our drug and alcohol problem. And I will say the same thing to people listening is you want to tackle the biggest thing first, which I believe is our relationship to food and being able to witness and control the voice in our head, and that exponentially will carry so much reward that we could then manage the food cravings and the quality of our food within one conversation.
Okay. Well, in the book, you talk about having thoughts and how the thoughts kind of morph into emotions, and then that morphs into behaviors, and that either morphs into a reward or a consequence. Can you tell us more about that, the thought process and how the thoughts, I don't know, create stress and create death?
I created this very, very simple formula for people to understand how to do the deeper work on their behaviors. We are a culture that is obsessed with behavior modification, and diets are just that. Eat this, don't eat that. Drink this, don't drink that. Move your body this way, don't move it that way. And it's teaching us how to modify behavior, but notice how when we modify behavior, we can only do it for a period of time, and we have a really hard time creating permanent change. And when I started to sit in front of thousands and thousands of clients and do workshops, I noticed that there was this pattern, which was that everything we think, whether it's conscious or unconscious, creates an emotional state for us, and it is our emotions that ultimately dictate our behaviors. So if my behavior is that I eat a box of crackers on the couch alone watching TV at night, there's an emotional state that precedes that. Never do we feel really grounded, happy, and at peace, and then binge eat an entire bowl of popcorn. We're typically feeling tired, lonely, stressed, exhausted, overwhelmed, and those emotional states are not created out of thin air. All of our emotions stem from beliefs, limiting beliefs, thoughts, thought patterns that we have. So in order to shift behaviors, we really need to heal them at the root, which is our thoughts. Our thoughts drive our emotions, and our emotions dictate our behaviors. And so much of the book is unearthing the thought patterns that we have around food, movement, sleep, hydration, meditation, all the things that we need to do to have our plate be a reflection of a strong, empowered mental state.
Okay. You know, what caught my attention in your book was you talked about creating a new narrative for yourself, and how even something as small, if you want to look at it that way, as that can help you shift, your BS, your belief system, and change the outcome. And then you talked about the five core beliefs. Could you share some of those beliefs with us?
Sure. When I say even a small narrative, you know, one of my narratives or thought patterns that I have personally is that in the moment, I allow the mind to tell me that I don't care. And everybody has a different pattern. Maybe it's, I'll start again tomorrow, or I deserve this, a little bit won't hurt. Mine was always, F it, I don't care in this moment, I'm just going to eat this because, and then whatever rationalization I would give. Mm-hmm. And when I started to bring more awareness to the thought pattern, it was fascinating, yet almost funny in a way, because the real truth is I care more about my health than I do anything else, because I know that my quality of life in any way, whether it's with my family, adventure, travel, work, it's all affected by my health. My quality of life is affected by my health. So I care about my health more than anything in the world. And the lie told honestly, which Brene Brown calls it a lie told honestly, something we say to ourselves, the mind says to us in the moment that we believe fully, but when we step back, we see how much of a lie it is. The lie told honestly was, I don't care. And just changing that narrative, that when the mind would say that, I would have the awareness and I would be triggered into shifting the story to say, wait a second, Carly, you care more about this than anything else. And just shifting that shifted a lot of my behavior as to what I was putting in my mouth right after I would say I don't care. But when it comes to the belief systems you speak of, there are these unconscious belief, core beliefs that we have that dictate a chronic emotional state where we sit most of the time. Some people you meet will be happy most of the time, or other people will be really calm and grounded. But most of us most of the time feel stressed, rushed, overwhelmed, not present. And there are core beliefs that are really driving this emotional state. Things like, I am not safe, or I have to do something. If I want to do something right, I have to do it myself. The world is out to get me. People cannot be trusted. I cannot trust myself, or ultimately I will fail at this. Mm-hmm. I am not enough. There's never enough time. These unconscious core beliefs drive a chronic emotional state of feeling stressed, worried, and overwhelmed. And I realized along my spiritual path that unless I take an active role in choosing the core beliefs, meaning to me the way I view the world and the way I show up to every day, unless I actively choose these, then my default fear-based core beliefs are going to come in. And so some of the new core beliefs that I talk about in the book, although I encourage every listener and reader to come up with your own if the ones that I've presented don't quite fit, but new core beliefs like everything is unfolding in the perfect timing, so that when something doesn't happen to me right away or for me, that I can say, you know what, the universe has a bigger plan, or it's not right now, but that everything's unfolding in the perfect timing for me. Or another core belief I have is that the universe has my back and is conspiring in my highest favor. A third one I talk about is that everything happens for me and for my growth, not to me. This way I don't play a victim in anything that happens. I really am empowered to believe that anything that happens in my life is really for my growth and for the experience my soul is meant to have. And as you can probably tell by the strength of these beliefs, someone who believes those things as the core of who they are is going to emotionally show up to every day with such a more peaceful, happy, whimsical state of mind. And ultimately, because of the formula we talked about, that will drive more positive behaviors, especially when it comes to the food that shows up on your plate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my favorite belief out of your five core beliefs that you listed in the book is, I am enough and I am loved. And sometimes you just need to hear that and say it out loud to yourself, because you might not get it from anybody else, but that doesn't stop you from believing in and loving yourself. So I absolutely love that. Folks, we're speaking
Thank
with
you.
Carly. You're welcome. We're speaking with Carly Pollack. She is the author of Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Fulfilled. And you can check her out at her website, and that's carlypollack.com, and that's CarlyPollack.com. Now, Carly, what about water? You know, they're saying that, you know, you need to drink, you know, pH water or, you know, clean water. And sometimes we don't have access to clean water. When I was thinking about those folks back in Flint, Michigan, I mean, it's been years and they're still drinking dirty water. So how do we get to the point, first of all, of drinking clean water? And how do we know what's coming out of our tap that the city or county or government is providing us is truly healthy for us?
That's a great question. Okay, there's a few parts to this answer. Mm-hmm. First thing is, we do need to drink a lot of water. In fact, we need to drink half our body weight in ounces of water per day. As we lose weight, if we have weight to lose, that number goes down. So it can be overwhelming for some people at first who feel like they're carrying extra weight, but getting that water in allows the body to flush toxins. It actually helps us feel more full, so we don't get a false sense of hunger when we're really dehydrated. And, so much of our body, I think the percentage is somewhere of 70 to 80% of our body is made up of water. So everything just works better when we're hydrated. The quality of water is important, but if all you have access to is tap water, drink the tap water. It's most important that you get the water in. Next step is, can you drink higher quality water than what the tap is providing you? There are free water tests. You can go online and order, if you just Google, you know, free water test or test my tap water, there's many companies that can test you, send you tests so that you can see if there's fluoride, lead, heavy metals, other things, other toxins and chemicals in your water. I personally use a reverse osmosis filter, but even something as simple as a carbon filter is at the very least, helpful at removing some of the harmful chemicals in our water. I love the RO water filter, which for a few $100s you can get on Amazon and have installed under your sink. I don't pay much attention to the alkaline water or all of those fads with changing the pH of your water. It's really about making sure that you're removing a lot of the common chemicals that we find in there. And for people listening who go, I don't have access to this, it's just my tap water, then don't give it another thought and just focus on getting half your body weight in ounces.
Okay, so between that and then eating the clean, organic, local grown food, it should help. But what if you really can't afford it? I mean, say, you know, you're a mom listening, or even a dad, you know, you've got 2 or 3 kids running around. Money's a little soft right now, even though the government's trying to tell us that everybody's rich and thriving. And, you know, you just can't afford, you know, to go organic. What do you do? How can you help yourself?
One thing with things like this, whether it's quality of water or organic produce, just do the best you can. So if you can't afford organic, just buy your regular fruits and vegetables at the store. Also, check out if you have in your area a local farmer's market, because you'll oftentimes find good produce there, or CSAs, which are those programs where you can order a bunch of produce and have it delivered. There's actually this website that a lot of people don't know about called Imperfect Produce. I didn't even realize this, but so much of the produce that is grown, an organic produce, doesn't look quite the way we expect it to look. It's, you know, it's natural. So the carrot is crooked, or the apple, you know, has some spots, and it doesn't make its way into the grocery store. And so much produce every year is wasted. And there's this website and such a genius idea, this company that is selling the imperfect produce that can't make its way into the grocery store and is usually thrown out. And there, it's a big price difference. So you can buy organic, cheap produce from this website, and it's delivered if you have access in your area. And if not, you go to your local store and you focus on buying fruits and vegetables. What I notice is that money is a resource, and so is time. Time and money are two of our most valuable resources. And when it comes to resources, we never feel like we have enough. And that's no matter how much money you have or how much time you have. Show me a very wealthy person, and what they're focused on is, you know, maybe they don't feel like they have enough money to buy an island, whereas we might feel like we don't have, you know, we always feel like we could have more. And so it's really about how creative we are with those resources, or how Tony Robbins would say, how resourceful we are with our resources. And so when it comes to being resourceful, think about even growing your own garden. If there's a little space in your backyard, or a local volunteering. I know in Austin, we have a huge produce manufacturer here, if I may call them a manufacturer, but called Johnson's Backyard. And if you go and volunteer your time working in the garden for just a few hours, they let you bring a bag, an empty bag, and you can fill it up with as much produce as possible. That's being really resourceful, trading a little bit of your time for something that you may not be able to afford.
Okay. So, folks, there are options. You just have to be a bit creative and think outside your current box, and then you can lead yourself to a healthier lifestyle. Now, Carly, you say that, you know, diet is a dirty four-letter word. Talk to us about that.
Well, I think that most people, when they hear the word diet, immediately, if we have dieted in the past, which most of us have, it immediately triggers them. And I actually want to neutralize the word diet, because diet technically is just a term for how we eat. So you could be on a really crappy diet, or you could have a really healthy diet, but every single person is on a diet. And even more so, we have so many foods. I mean, I have a Whole Foods market here, or any supermarket has an entire aisle just dedicated to potato chips. There are so many foods that are at our fingertips in this country that are not healthy for us, that are constantly barraging us and around us all the time. And so if you want to be the healthiest version of yourself, let's get honest. There's some sort of diet that you need to be on, whether it's gluten-free, dairy-free, low sugar, low carb. And if we could just get over the word diet and start to listen to our bodies as to what it's asking us to eat or not eat, then we can neutralize that feeling of scarcity and punishment that we normally associate to dieting, and we're going to be so much more able to reach the outcome we want, which is a healthy body that reflects how much we love and care about ourselves.
Okay. Let's go back to food for a moment. Real food versus Frankenfood or fake food. How can one tell when they're in a grocery store, especially in that produce aisle, exactly what they're buying, especially if it's not a section is not marked as organic? Is there a way to check what we're buying before we get to the register?
Yeah, not everything I buy is going to be labeled organic. Really, that applies to your fruits and vegetables and ideally your meats being pasture-raised, free-range, organic, grass-fed. Those are all very important labels for your meats and your produce. But when it comes to your aisles and your store-bought items, when it comes to Frankenfoods or what I say very processed foods, foods that are healthy for you are alive. And when foods are alive, that means they spoil and rot, and there's a death to them, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So when someone asks me to define processed food is a food that doesn't die, that has an incredibly long shelf life. Something like a carton of eggs, which after a short period of time, you would not want to eat anymore, versus a box of pasta, which can sit on the shelf for years and years and years, or in your pantry for 10 years, and then you can cook it, and it would taste exactly the same. When it comes to identifying this, just think about the foods that you want to put in your body are foods that rot and spoil, and we've all heard this. The perimeter of the supermarket is where they keep these foods, and trying to avoid the aisles as much as possible, because any food you'll find within an aisle that doesn't require refrigeration is at risk of being what we would call a processed food. And I say at risk because there's always exceptions to the rule, things like nuts and seeds, which don't require refrigeration, but still being incredibly healthful foods for you.
Okay. Now, there's certain foods that perhaps maybe you should never pass our lips or pass our lips very sparingly. One I can think of is sugar. So how can we, you know, really reduce the amount of sugar? As children, a lot of children, you know, once they get that first little piece of candy in their mouth as a baby or a cookie or whatever, they're like, this is good, and they crave more of that, and they gravitate toward that. And unfortunately or fortunately, a lot of people are still, you know, running the kids through McDonald's to get a Happy Meal. The French fry, you know, breaks down to a sugar. So how can we're training our kids, okay, to be sugar addicts. So how can we, especially if we're anywhere from 25 on up, how can we reduce the amount of sugar in our diet?
Yeah, it's funny. I was telling you before we jumped on that my daughter just turned one, actually, today. We had a birthday party for her yesterday, and so many of my friends and family said, you know, baby's first sugar, baby's first cake. And we had a cake, but I didn't feed any to her. And everyone was saying, oh, don't you want that picture of her with the cake all over her mouth? And you have to. And And I thought, this young girl, soon to be young woman in many years, will have years and years of having to use discipline to not eat sugar. Why, as a parent, would I start her now when she doesn't know it exists and there's no suffering there? It didn't make any sense to me that I would give her sugar just for the you know, for a photo op. So
yeah.
You're right. Culture really projects this idea that kids need to eat a lot of sugar, then we get hooked. The best way is to start giving yourself sugar alternatives, using a pure maple syrup or a organic local honey as a sweetener. I love to use stevia, which is a calorie-free sweetener that is completely natural. It comes from a plant. I actually grow it in my backyard.
Uh-huh.
And just start to wean yourself off processed sugar. Processed sugar meaning cane sugar, candies, sodas, and start with one thing at a time. If you drink soda, that would be the place to start. And if you're drinking soda that's also caffeinated, remember, you're not only addicted to the sugar, but you're addicted to the caffeine. So to make it easier for yourself, first choose caffeine-free soda. Then once you get the caffeine out of your body, then you can start to wean yourself off the soda. And don't go to Diet Coke, because the artificial sweeteners in diet sodas are far worse for you than the actual sugar in regular soda.
Mm-hmm. So if you need to get that soda, just go for the real thing, but try to...
Go for the real thing, yes, and then try for alternatives, seltzer, carbonated water, flavored water. We drink a lot of Topo Chico here in Austin. It's one. The main point is it's one thing at a time. If you're the type of all or nothing, rip off a Band-Aid person, then set your intention and create an expectation. Give yourself some guidelines. I'm going to go 30 days without sugar. Get it out of my system. I drink a lot of herbal tea at night with stevia when I would normally have a sweet craving. And on my website, on nutritionalwisdom.com, which is my private practice, I have a whole section for recipes, and there is a dessert section where you can make processed sugar-free desserts and snacks that are naturally sweet.
Okay. I'm sorry, I was writing your website down, so I can't talk and write at the same time. It just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work.
I have the Carly Pollack website, which is where you'll find my online programs and my blog and a ton of useful information. But I also own a private practice here in Austin, Texas, with individualized coaching, and I believe I have the best coaches in the world, including, you know, I do a little bit of coaching, but then I have a staff, and nutritionalwisdom.com is where we keep all of our amazing recipes, and they're all gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, and then we have a whole dessert category.
Yeah, and folks, actually on carlypollack.com, there are some recipes, so, you know, check out the site thoroughly. You'll enjoy what you see. It's very picturesque and very calming. And so, you know, definitely check it out, because there's a lot of information there for you. Now, Carly, you said that before we attempt to achieve anything, we must have extreme clarity about the outcome we want to create. Why? Because, you know, like a woman in a relationship, sometimes they call me all the time. They're like, well, I want a guy. And I'm like, well, what type of guy? Oh, I don't know, a guy. You know, so they manifest a guy, but then he ends up beating the crap out of them. They're like, well, that didn't work. It's like, well, you weren't clear. So why is it important to be clear when we're talking about our bodies and nourishing our bodies?
It's important to be clear about anything we want. That clarity creates motivation. When you're not clear on what you want, first of all, you and I both know, when you're not clear, you start to call in all sort of wishy-washy things, and then what you get is a manifestation of how unclear you were. But losing weight or getting healthy is really, really hard. So is so are relationships or anything I feel that's really, really worth it in life. It's difficult at times, and it's that clarity that keeps us motivated and that pushes us through. And this is why when people are trying to lose weight for a particular event, like a high school reunion or a wedding or a vacation, the reason why we tend to be so on it for a period of time is because we have clarity. We go, oh, next week I'm going to be sitting on the beach in Mexico, and you visualize yourself in that bathing suit, and you're like, girl, I need to eat the salad for lunch because I've got 5 days till Mexico. The problem with that type of clarity is that event goes away. And so it's so situational. As soon as that event comes and goes, we lose any sense of clarity. So I want your clarity to be on an outcome that's not only event related, which I don't mind people creating motivation based on an event. It's just we have to think long term as well. How do you want to feel in general every single day when you're older, once you've had children, and really have different snapshots of your life? Not only do I want to look good in a bathing suit, of course, but I also want to feel energetic every morning when I wake up. I want to age gracefully when I'm elderly in my 80s and 90s. I want to be medication free. I want to still be active in my body. I don't want my life to be a series of doctor's appointments. And I see what happens with my parents and my grandparents, and that sort of thing creates an immense amount of clarity for me. And then in the moment when it's the decision whether or not to eat something or whether to move my body that day or not, that clarity really pushes me through.
Okay, so having that clarity does work. Now, what about the concept of self-care? When I work with women, I tell them to be selfish. You know, take care of self first because you'll have more energy, if nothing else, to give towards others. But talk to us about self-care and why that's so important.
Self-care has gotten such a weird reputation of recent because I feel like everyone's talking about it and it's so overused as a term. And the second we think about self-care, we think about taking this 40-minute bubble bath, which no one does. And although that is a type of good for you. But most of us go, I got to take a bath, yeah. I got to take a bath, I got to take a bath, and then,
stressful.
You know, no one ever gets in the bath. Yeah, exactly. Self-care, you nailed it. Self-care, if not framed correctly, is stressful. It's just another thing to add to our to-do list. Oh, I have to meditate. Oh, I have to cook. I have to whatever. I want to be realistic about self-care. Self-care can be the 2 minutes that you're taking your makeup off at night. And instead of just rubbing it off vigorously while you're letting your mind run rampant about all your fears and judgments, it's pretending that you're giving yourself a facial and touching yourself and your face delicately and smelling those face products that you've spent so much money on and feeling the warm water in the shower. Self-care is an all-day thing. Self-care is also the energy you bring to every moment. So while there are marked activities for self-care, you know, solo time, taking a bath, meditation, mani-pedi, you know, journaling, traveling, taking time off of work, all of those things to take care of one's soul, of oneself. It's also about each moment and how you show up, especially for me as a busy mom with a one-year-old and a private practice and a book and all these things going on. I don't necessarily have the opportunity of taking that time every single day to really be alone. So it's every moment for me that I might say a loving thought to myself. I might take a deep breath, and that is self-care also.
Okay. Well, you know, and it's important that we take that time, even if it's just 10 minutes or the 40-minute bath, you know, because I figured out I could – not watch TV for 40 minutes and get in the tub and nourish myself and have, you know, mood lighting and, you know, all kinds of things and feel absolutely wonderful once I got out. And that felt so much better than sitting there watching, you know, the Housewives or whomever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
You say in your book, you offer 5 non-negotiables for weight loss, health, in vitality. Could you share those with us?
What I realized in studying not only myself but so many people is that there is not just one path to wellness. You could have someone who does the paleo diet or versus somebody who's vegan. That there's so many different ways to be your healthiest version of yourself. But that there are these 5 non-negotiables that every human must have in order to be grounded enough to make the best decisions as you navigate your day-to-day. And those 5 are we have to exercise. We have to move our bodies. Every human being is meant to move. We need to cook our own food. Not every single thing we eat. Of course, I still go out to eat, but the majority of the food that goes into our bodies, we really need to prepare ourselves, because we cannot trust restaurants or the food industry to make sure that food is healthy. Mm-hmm. We need to meditate and give our thoughts a respite. We need silent time, which is different than meditation, but we need time out in nature. We need time with our cell phones off. We need time away from social media. And we also need to get adequate sleep so that our cells and hormones and our body in general can rest and repair and reset for the next day.
Okay. Well, I'd like to talk about that sleep component a little bit more. So many people today are having, and it doesn't even matter their age group, they're having such a hard time getting to sleep and then staying asleep. Is there anything that you could share nutritionally that will help one get on the path of, you know, a deeper sleep or at least getting to sleep?
Yes, but I will say that most people have trouble getting to sleep. They have trouble getting to sleep because they're what I call tired but wired. They're physically exhausted, so the body is ready for sleep, but their mind is so wired that they have cortisol coursing through their veins, and they're just not able to fall asleep. Nutritionally speaking, it's best to eat carbohydrates, or if you were taking in any sugar earlier in the day, eating that stuff at night, sugar is a stimulant, and carbohydrates break down into sugar. So having your evening meal be small and heavy in fats and proteins helps prepare the body and digestion for sleep. Another thing is watch when and how much caffeine you drink. Caffeine has something called a half-life of 6 hours. A half-life is the amount of time it is still circulating in your blood, which means if you drink a cup of coffee at 2 o'clock, at 8 p.m., you still have adrenaline and cortisol flowing through your blood at a time where you should be winding down, and melatonin and human growth hormone, you know, should be preparing to ramp up. So cut the caffeine either out entirely if you have trouble sleeping, and or make sure that you're not drinking any caffeine after 12. And at night, do the things to help prepare your body for sleep. We're not supposed to be looking at screens or watching TV. Take a warm bath or a hot shower. Light some candles. Read, which helps people fall asleep. And really start to wind down an hour or so before your bedtime so that your body and cells get the message that it's time to go to bed.
Okay. Okay, age-old question. What about alcohol?
I'm glad you brought that up, because alcohol, which is technically a depressant, can act as a stimulant for so many people. I can't tell you how many people drink wine at the end of the night to, quote-unquote, calm down and relax, but it interferes with their sleep. Either they can't get to sleep or they pass out and they wake up in the middle of the night because their blood sugar isn't regulated and the alcohol affects hormones in a way that wakes them up. So if you're having trouble sleeping, cutting alcohol, cutting caffeine, doing all of those things I mentioned, plus putting on a meditation at night. And then for people who are still having issues, using or trying a melatonin product or an L-theanine, which is an amino acid that helps us relax and get to sleep, can be really helpful.
Okay. So talk to us for a moment about gluten. Should we eat gluten? How do you know if gluten's hurting you? Do we need to be gluten-free? And if you go to a restaurant and they say serve gluten-free foods, what questions should you ask?
Gluten to me is kind of like sugar, whereas we could all agree that sugar is not good for anyone, but there are definitely going to be people that are more sensitive to sugar than others. That's how I feel about gluten. Gluten is not something that is necessarily good for you if you're intolerant to it. And let me back up and explain what gluten is. Gluten is the protein molecule in certain grains, in wheat, barley, and rye. And we notice that gluten, think of the word glue. It's like glue for our digestive system, and it creates inflammation. We tend to overeat it. There's a book called Wheat Belly that is a very famous book in the nutrition field, and it will teach you all about the dangers of gluten and how inflammatory it is, not only for the digestive system, but also for the brain, causing memory issues, mental fog, depression, anxiety, and so on, because the gut and the brain are very much connected. When it comes to being gluten-free, I prefer to recommend that all people be at least gluten mindful, meaning if you can buy a gluten-free product that you like and it's a good old healthy alternative, then buy it. If you see no, most people say who are not gluten-free, they go, well, you know, gluten doesn't affect me. You really don't know unless you remove something for a period of time and then bring it back and see if your body reacts to it. Because a lot of the time, your baseline, you don't know if that's the healthiest you can possibly feel. So I do recommend everybody go at least 2 weeks, at least, without eating any gluten, and then sit down with a piece of toast and eat it and see if there is any physical reaction in the body, like bloating, fatigue, inflammation, runny nose, any skin issues, poop issues, things of that nature, just really looking for anything different. When a restaurant says something is gluten-free, the question I would ask is, what is the alternative? You know, what are you using to make it gluten-free? Because a lot of places will use corn as an alternative, which a lot of people react to and can't digest well either. So when you look at gluten-free products, I'm usually looking to rule out that corn is the alternative grain that they're using, because I don't want to eat a bunch of corn either. I'm looking for alternatives like brown rice, cassava, tapioca, any other rice flour, coconut, things of that nature.
Okay. Well, I went to a national Italian chain with my husband about 8-9 months ago now. And, you know, eating gluten-free, and I told him that gluten-free was an allergy thing, not just a lifestyle choice. So I got the gluten-free pasta, which, you know, didn't taste too bad. You know, it's palatable. And I'm eating. I get down to almost the last morsel, and there's another type of pasta in the bowl. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is different, because I was eating corkscrews, and now I'm getting, you know, this little flat thing. So I, asked the manager, I said, is this particular little morsel here gluten-free? And she says, no. And I said, well, I asked for gluten-free. I told them that it was a health concern. Oh, I mean, she bent over backwards for herself, but, you know, you need to be careful in the kitchen. And when you're ordering, kind of like stir through the food first to make sure you're getting what they truly say, because if it's a truly life and death situation, you could really get messed up pretty quickly. So just be aware, I guess, you know, when you're asking for gluten-free when you're out.
When it's a life or death situation, you need to go and only eat at restaurants there where their kitchen is completely gluten-free.
Yeah.
Because if you're celiac, which is the disease that is you get diagnosed with when you have a severe allergy to gluten, not only does it not need to be, can't be in your food, but it can't be in lotions and shampoos and conditioners. And we put gluten as a binder in many things. So, you know, when you're being gluten mindful, just know that when you go out and you order a gluten-free meal, you may or may not be getting a completely gluten-free meal. And we understand that the restaurants can't, you know, unless their bakery or restaurant is completely gluten-free certified, that they cannot guarantee that food will not be mixed together. I mean, your experience is just the restaurant being irresponsible, but that's what you'll get with those major chains, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and the other lesson I learned, if I'm going out to eat, I don't bother with the gluten-free. I just get whatever, because you just don't know where the truth is and where the lie isn't. Now, on your website, KaliPalak.com, I was reading one of the blogs, and I don't remember exactly, but I don't know, it was you or someone else, but they ate food, and 3 months later, they got eczema?
Yes, so my daughter, when I was pregnant, for the first time in my life, I had eczema spots. And then when I gave birth to my daughter, after a few months of her being alive, when she was about 3 or 4 months old, she started coming down with eczema. And it was just really interesting to see. I had let my diet slip a little bit when I was pregnant, and I started eating some dairy and some gluten. And I think the stress on my liver just from being pregnant made me more susceptible to skin issues. And the takeaway here is that the skin and the gut are very closely related, and eczema almost 100% of the time is, if not, I could say 100% of the time, partly due to food intolerances and sensitivities. So for anybody listening who has any sort of skin issues, psoriasis, eczema, any sort of rash on the back of their arms, things like that, you definitely want to take a look at your diet, what you're eating, and start to do some research between eczema and undiagnosed food intolerances.
Okay. Carly, our time is almost up together, and it's been a delight speaking with you. What's the big takeaway you want our listeners to have from our conversation today?
The big takeaway is, if you've been chasing a diet or chasing weight loss or just feeling like you can't get a hold of your health, it's time to look a little deeper to the root of what is causing your lack of consistency or your frustration, and really doing deep personal inner work on your mind, your beliefs, your life experience, your core values, as well as focusing on the food. And to do that, a lot of the times takes professional coaching. So don't hesitate to reach out, whether it's my team or someone local to you, to get help along the way, because the link between success and accountability is simply irrefutable.
Okay, very well said. And folks, if you're older, over the age of 50, you truly need to work with someone, so that all the, quote, you know, diseases of older age don't come to visit you, or at least you stave them off as long as possible. So we've been speaking with Carly Pollack. Her book is Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Fulfilled. You can check her out at one of her two websites, nutritionalwisdom.com or CarlyPollack.com. Carly, I appreciate you. It's been great being with you today. You've shared so much wonderful information.
Thank you so much for having me and for fostering this important conversation. And my hope and intention is that whoever listening today takes something away that starts them on the journey for permanent change.
I think they will. And to the audience, I thank you for being with us. And the divine in me honors the divine in all of you. Now, when you're ready to raise your vibration, shift your energy, you can give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of honoring your body with food and water. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.